Voices of the Temple, official podcast of the Temple of Witchcraft, exploring mystery and magic through love, will, and wisdom, hosted by Adam Sartwell. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Voices of the Temple. Tonight's edition is with Derek O'Sullivan, as being interviewed tonight. I just want to get us started with our invocations, but before we do that, let's take a deep breath and get ourselves into a sacred space. Just release all those tensions of the day, and we'll come together in this sacred space, in our temple beyond the worlds, as we call. I call to the Great Spirit. I call to the two who move as one, through the three rays of love, will, and wisdom. I call upon the goddess, maiden, mother, and crone, past, present, and future, creator, sustainer, and destroyer, weaver of the web. I call to the god, lord of light and lord of darkness, god of the green and gold, god of the horn and the red, singer of the song. Be with us now and forever. So mote it be. Blessed be everyone. So as I said, I have Derek O'Sullivan is who I've interviewed today. He also sent me a little message telling me that he also wanted me to say that his partner, Ed Newton, is the one who does most of the drumming with him in the rituals, so he wanted to get his name in there, but had forgotten to say it in the actual interview. So it's pretty fascinating. We get to talk about art and the Leo ministry. It's pretty cool. I hope you'll enjoy it. Some of the things that we have coming up tomorrow is the Lammas ritual. I'm sure anyone who hears this will probably not be jumping up and doing that tomorrow with me, but we do have in 2 weeks the Hecate ritual with me as the officiant. And if you want to come, bring questions for Hecate herself, who will be channeled through some priestesses and priests that are going to channel Hecate, and bring an offering for Hecate, and bring something for the animal shelter. We're mostly focusing on dogs because they are sacred to Hecate, but just bring in, like, I think I have a list on the website. It's like old blankets, toys, collars, food for dogs, and even, you know, getting a gift certificate to Petco or anything like that is a great offering for both Hecate and the dogs, and honoring her message about our companionship with our friends in the animal kingdom. If you want to know more about our upcoming rituals and events, please visit our website at templeofwitchcraft.org. We have upcoming classes for the witchcraft classes coming up for enrollment. If you send in things now, it's easier to do, get into those classes. You want to do it the earliest you can, so when it does come, you're all set and ready and on the list. We also have coming up some classes at Myths and Maidens. They haven't been fully announced. They'll be with people who are the greatest in their fields of a certain thing. I know it was proposed that I go and do teach incense making, which I do for Copper Cauldron, which is affiliated with the temple, and part of the proceeds goes to the temple. So, if you're coming to any events, I usually sell the incenses there and the potions, so it'll be fun. Hoping that we will get online at some point and be able to sell the potions online. You may not be able to come to tomorrow's mask making workshop because it probably will be passed by the time you hear this, but in our next ritual coming up in Maybon, Alex Wright will be doing a class on ecstatic body postures, which is very cool, and I wish I could take it, but I will not be in the area, so I won't be able to take it. I'll be off at Between the Worlds, a gay men's spiritual conference held in Ohio, so I will not be there for the Maybon ritual. It's kind of sad, but. And I also kind of want to take Alex's class, so I'm hoping that she will do it as one of the Myths and Maidens classes so that I will actually get to take it. Ecstatic body postures are where you place your body in a certain position, and that position attunes you to a specific energy. And, we've used them in the temple meditations for the Wheel of the Year stuff, either using like the bear position for healing or the goddess position for divine wisdom. They're very cool, very interesting way of doing meditation, and gets your whole body sort of into it, and you have to hold this position, which you'd think it would be harder than it is. After a while, it doesn't hurt anymore, and because it does hurt in the beginning, but after a while, it doesn't hurt, and then you are off on a journey without actually having to count down or do any other sort of trance-inducing thing. So, that's very cool. I know I probably say this for the past couple of podcasts, but you really should, if you're in the area and you can, come to one of the full moon circles with Alex Wright. It is so interesting to have all these different witches come together and do a ritual where each has a part and everyone is very equal and can show their inner light and their shining moments of what they like to do in ritual, what is challenging sometimes in ritual. And to come together and experience magic together. The last one was Celtic, which was very cool. It's hard to describe, but it's very powerful and a magical experience. We also have our moon circles with the women's circles, which are at different dates, but the women's circle, I believe, is moving to a different location soon, so check with the website to make sure that you know where they are. You can also email cancer@templeofwitchcraft.org to get any information on that. That is the cancer ministry. They take care of all the women's circles. If you want to do any of the Wheel of the Year or the full moon rituals with Alex Wright, please email Pisces@templeofwitchcraft.org. And soon we will be having the Temple Bell coming out, which is our first sort of, I believe it's going to be quarterly publication with different voices from the temple, but in written form. So the temple people are going to be, putting up information, articles. There's a place for the founders to give little sections and articles. There's also an interview with me, Adam Sartwell, with Tina Whittle. She is a novelist and freelance writer who was doing stuff for our wonderful Temple Bell. It came out really good, and I got to see, little advanced copy, because I'm, here when Steve does the actual putting together, so I get to see those kind of things. I get to talk about the upcoming Virgo podcast, which I'm going to put some feelers out to see if anyone has any questions for me, because I'm pretty much going to be interviewing myself, which is kind of interesting. But I thought I would put on the Temple fan page on Facebook and see what people had for questions for me. I've considered having silly voices do the thing, which I'm actually pretty good at making silly voices. We'll see. I don't know. Maybe I can be convinced. We'll see. Well, without further ado, I'll move on into my interview with Derek O'Sullivan. I hope you enjoy listening to it. All right, hello, listeners. And I'm here with Derek O'Sullivan, the Leo minister. I know when I say it, you can almost hear the arch in it.
I say throw it in. Good evening, Archminister Sartwell.
Yes, exactly.
Cheers.
Cheers. All right. Just so I can go completely out of order.
All
All
right.
right. As the Leo minister, what are you in charge of?
In charge of the creative aspects of the temple, responsible for helping out with, or I should say, instituting, like making t-shirts and bumper stickers and badges and just kind of like tangible objects that people can come in and kind of purchase or be a part of in regards to connecting to the temple. And also, some of the music aspects of what the temple's starting to do now. I do music for some of the rituals and been doing some recording of some of that music and hope to get some people that have been involved in some of the rituals in the past to maybe contribute some pieces and kind of see the different things that we come up with. I want to try to get a community project going with some of them. But yeah, that's about the prosperity rituals as well. We are also responsible for helping out with any kind of prosperity work that's done and aspects like that. But mainly it's through advertising and our connections with the Copper Cauldron to help with that and help with advertising for the temple and
Yeah.
stuff like that.
Cool. Now, do you consider yourself an artist?
Ah, artist is such a it's such a tricky term.
It's a loaded question.
It is. It's so hard. Like I struggle a lot with titles. I just for myself. Sometimes I feel as though titles end up limiting what our perception is of certain things, and it actually caused me to come up with ways around it. You know, like reclaiming words and throwing other words in there that people like don't think of. But I think of myself as a creative person. I have a hard time wearing the title artist, but as a creative person, that's how I consider myself.
Yeah, there's a technique in, I think it's a Phyllis Kirat book where they you just go around and you forget all of the names for things and then try to describe it without
Okay.
actually using its name.
Yeah.
And it's pretty interesting. It like gets you to the point, like if you can't use the word tree describing it
Yeah.
and sort of getting to that point where the tree is not just the word tree, it's more than that.
Yeah,
And
exactly.
it's a
It's
living
the
organism. It's like,
Yep.
there are
We
so many different ways to describe it.
put a lot of baggage on certain titles and certain names, and then depending on our culture, we also change what words mean, that they no longer mean what they intended. So now, if you're not aware of what a culture uses that word for, you can really kind of get yourself into trouble, just accidentally. But remember, I was thinking when you were mentioning that, remember $100,000 pyramid? You had to sit and you couldn't say the name, and you'd just be like, "Well, what is it?"
Yeah.
It's the same, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of the same process, really.
You'll find out that that book was actually secretly written by, the guy from the American Bandstand. It's like, oh, he ghost wrote that.
Oh, I hope not.
That's his actual name.
Yeah. Speaking of another label, do you label yourself as a witch?
In that way, yes, I do. It took a long time for me to be comfortable with being able to say that. And not so much because I thought it was maybe more of my own baggage. Not so much I care what anybody else thinks if I say that I'm a witch and what their perception of it is. That's their issue.
Yeah.
But I like the idea of when Christopher mentioned the idea of reclaiming the name and not letting it get, like, lost, you know. And,
yeah.
And a lot of my baggage ends up stemming to some of the crappy things that pop culture has done to the name witch and mm-hmm. witchcraft. So,
yeah
I do. I feel as though it's another loaded one. It's almost like when someone says, like, oh, are you a witch? Like, you feel like you have to explain it first, though, you know, so mm-hmm. that they're not coming away from it. You know, thinking like, oh yeah, all right, so tonight you're going to go slay a baby, you know, and ride a unicorn to bed. Like, no, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I'm not doing that.
Yeah, I usually have people start to learn who I am,
mm-hmm.
and then after they know who I am, then I tell them I'm a witch,
yeah.
and it's sort of like culture shock for them. They're like, you're a witch? No.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you're the most benign person I know.
Well, yeah, I mean, there you go. That's their screwed up perception of it, you know,
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
We grow up in this day and age and with Halloween and everything and not even knowing what that is, really.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing. Like, look at the show. Look at the show Charmed.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's fodder. It's pop culture. But at the same time, like, how much damage did that do, you know, because of some of that stuff? But,
yeah,
you know, there's a lot of that. And that stuff will never go away. But I guess as long as you're also counterbalancing it in some way,
mm-hmm.
like, well, here's the actual witchcraft. Like, this is what
it
is. Kind of put that out there. I guess that's part of what I hope to even do with my contribution to the temple, to help with that.
That's cool.
So.
Yeah, I was thinking of, while we were talking about names and how, you know, words have changed. If you take nice and you go back,
it
actually means, like, ignorant.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And, like, its first usage was like, oh, well, that's nice, and it was used sarcastically so much that people actually thought that it meant like nice as it does now. So
yeah, see, now I
it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, like, that's great.
That over time that word has changed its meaning to something else.
It's sad in some ways.
But it is. So what brought you to witchcraft?
I was in college, and I had been going through a lot of experiences of realizing that what I was studying wasn't going to pan out the way that I thought it was going to. Kind of had a preconceived notion that I thought I knew what I was getting involved in, I guess, as an artist or as a creative person. I studied art, and I went to college for it after studying it in high school and everything. So when I got to school and I realized that they were really looking to make you kind of like just working for an ad agency, essentially, is all they were looking to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not how I viewed art. I didn't look at art as a way of doing that for myself. It was an expression of who I am. And as time went on, I wasn't expressing myself. I was only doing the projects.
Mm-hmm.
And it started to kind of, I found that there was a distortion within myself because of that. So I stepped away from school, and I went through a period, a very short amount of time, before I was exposed and met Christopher and exposed to his teachings. But a friend of mine, through a conversation, I was telling them about a vision experience I had. And there was a lot of symbology in it, and there was a lot of symbols that made sense to me, but only because of my distance from organized religion. And
mm-hmm.
she suggested that I speak with a good friend of hers, and that I should maybe think about coming to a ritual that was open, which was being held at that time, it was being held at Christopher's family home. So I went to Yule for my first experience in a ritual,
mm-hmm.
having never gone except for church, Christian church, yummy. So that was kind of like where the scene was broken a little bit on that. But I ended up talking to Christopher afterwards, and he suggested that I think about maybe sitting in on the classes that he was starting to teach. I think when I met him, he had done one set of classes, and that became his close working magic group. And that was one of the people that I met. Her name is Jessica. And
mm-hmm.
through Jessica and Janella, I was introduced to Christopher. So that's kind of how it started. I sat in on the classes, and just from listening to him talk and the different exercises, I realized that it was exactly what was going on the whole time. Like, the revelation was that I was already having this happen, mm-hmm. I guess, was really it. It wasn't that he gave me some huge piece of insight. He just made me able to gain insight from myself and realized that I had been meditating, not knowing I had been meditating, and my expression of myself through my art and through my creative process is a form of magic, and it was just, you know, they were running in the same direction. Mm-hmm. So it seemed to work very well for me. I learned a lot about myself, and I learned a lot about the things that were coming out of me that I didn't know about. It was like my body was already aware.
Mm-hmm. Learning about the... didn't have a name for it yet.
Yeah, it didn't have the dialogue, and it opened up my eyes to the idea that, you know, the past lives aspect really kind of spoke volumes to me, made sense as my body remembered, or my spirit remembered what had happened, and mm-hmm. and my mind and my consciousness were still catching up. So yeah, it was kind of interesting. You know, you start laughing sometimes when that stuff happens. You're like, oh, that's what that is? Oh, all right, okay.
Yeah, I can understand that. So, speaking of, you know, the magic and the mystery, do you have any startling manifestations of magic or stories of revelations that have happened to you?
Yeah, I had a weird one that happened to me once, which was, it actually happened in our classes with Christopher. Mm-hmm. And it's right at that point when you're in, you know, Witchcraft 1, and it was either 1 or 2, I think it was 1, but it ends up being where you're kind of wondering, like, well, is this happening? You know?
Yeah.
Am I finding these threads, and these threads are, you know, always there, which is true, it is, that is what's happening, but, mm-hmm. you know, am I manifesting this? And I had a voice show up in a meditation, which was not what we were meditating about or guiding for, and the voice just said, go to the doctor. That's pretty abrupt, you know, like, mm-hmm. okay. So I was, you know, the class finishes, and I talked to Christopher afterwards, and just kind of threw it out there with him, and he's like, oh, that's a pretty direct message. So I pick up my phone the next day, and I call my doctor, and trying to get an appointment with my doctor is kind of a joke, you know, to go see them right away. You know, you have to have an eye falling out of your head, and, oh, come in today. Mm-hmm. But they were like, oh, I have an opening in 2 days. Can you come in, you know, Tuesday or whatever? Sure. Yeah. And that was really odd. And when I went in, I found out that I actually had, because I was suffering from a form of eczema that I had been, because of my stress with school, I had opened up this whole inflammation of eczema. Hmm. And I had scratched the hell out of it when I was sleeping one night and didn't realize that I had done quite a number, and I was building a blood infection.
Wow.
And I had no idea. And my doctor was like, well, you know, if we didn't catch this now, this could have blown into something that, you know, wouldn't have been treatable. So there was that. That was a pretty big, like, wake up, like, in that way. Because I had small things like that happen, like, when I was a kid, little flashes of things, and, you know, then they come true. And you're mm-hmm. just kind of like, oh, that's weird. And, you know, you brush it off for the most part, and, you know, this was really kind of speaking that, you know, you shouldn't brush all that stuff off, you know, to pay attention more. Mm-hmm. But aside from that, mainly, I'd say the people that I've come across. I definitely was introduced to a lot of people that, like, you feel like you knew them before you knew them. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of that from this, you know, opening up this path in my life. There's been a lot of that.
So,
I don't know if that answered your question.
Yeah, I think that's an amazing story. Okay. So, I know this isn't on our list of questions.
Okay.
What does your practice look like? Like, do you meditate still? Do you cast circles a lot? Do you mostly community-based things? What do you do?
My private practice kind of revolves around revolves a bit around with my creative process, which I guess I kind of took like a roundabout way to get back to it. I had kind of separated from art and then getting into magic, and now I've been trying to find I've been finding that middle ground where the two of them actually work together, mm-hmm. I guess, which is what I thought in the first place. But so I do meditate. I meditate all the time, as frequently as I can. It helps with a lot of other aspects. I have a lot of other things, medical things going on, and meditation helps tremendously. Yeah. I do cast circles. A lot of it is mental. I don't use a lot of tools. I guess that kind of falls into the same idea of being like with titles, where titles limit.
Yeah.
I look at the tools as an extension of myself, but a lot of times I try to like own the aspect that those tools, I don't need those tools. You know,
yeah.
I embody those parts of myself that I bring together and that I combine for a magical experience. So a lot of times when I draw, especially when I draw, I might mentally cast a circle and then ask for, through a meditation, ask for the spirit to move through me to express onto paper. And I've gotten a lot of insights through that, meditating and experimenting with that, kind of like an automatic writing, automatic drawing.
Yeah.
And I found, or I learned later studying Reiki, I found out that I had drawn, through college doing this, I found that I drew a huge amount of Reiki symbols and not having any idea what they were, and then studying Reiki and finding out and going through my notebooks from school and stuff, I'm like, oh, that's really, really strange that all these things were coming out. I just thought that they were very interesting ideas and used them in my art. Excuse me. So, I try to incorporate that a lot, but I also have a partner who is much more of a ceremonial magician.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a side of myself that's very strongly drawn to that.
Yeah.
I really enjoy... it's funny. A lot of the times I find that I read this information written by people that I think are not the best people to read it from, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I find Aleister Crowley fascinating, but I think as a person he was a bit of a... he was an ass.
If I can say that on a podcast.
But he had some amazing knowledge and information that came through him, and that was luckily shared. And, you know, I think the Golden Dawn suffers a lot from that, too. You know, their egos got in the way, I think, more than what they were doing. They focused on the wrong aspect, maybe. That's tough to say. I mean, I wasn't alive then. I didn't have their life. So to say that is you know, that's just a judgment from me. But I'm very drawn towards that, and I like to incorporate, like, the symbology and creating symbols and finding new ways of expressing the self. You know, I think that some of that stuff, the older forms are very interesting, but I think it's time to create a new form, maybe find new ways, and maybe embrace a new aspect. You know, I think New Age is kind of run with it to the point that they've watered everything down too much.
Yeah.
And I think maybe like kind of reclaiming some of that stuff, bringing some of that stuff back into magic practice and letting people get exposed to it more.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I guess that's pretty much in a nutshell.
Okay. So do you have any plans for your ministry?
Right now, the main thing that I've been focusing on, and I've been working, Christopher has given me some designs of his, and I have some designs of my own, which we hope to do for t-shirts and some other stuff. But the focus I've had mainly has been with the t-shirts. I was speaking with someone about it yesterday, and I realized that a lot of my designs, they all fall across like the chest, I find.
Yeah.
You know, like on a t-shirt, it seems like when you have a print that falls on, say, the whole t-shirt, it almost like gets lost. It's kind of too much.
Yeah.
And I think they're great for, you know, if you're 15, 16 years old, but you get to a certain point where you don't maybe necessarily want this giant print of madness on you.
Yeah.
And I kind of like the idea of, like, small symbols over, like, where the heart chakra falls. And the idea, especially with working with the ministry and the temple, is, like, you're speaking from the heart, which I think is kind of the undercurrent message of the temple of witchcraft. So a lot of the designs have been stuff that I look upon as being heartfelt expressions, so I hope to have the t-shirts kind of reflect that, but that's the aspect of it that I've been focusing on lately. I've had some other ideas. I actually am looking forward to the mask making workshop for Litha. I'm going to go, and I'm just going to be a fly on the wall and kind of observe and get a look at all the different things that people are creating and kind of making my little list in my head on where people's strengths lie. And I have kind of a community project in mind, but it's like really kind of, it's a little bit, it's kind of like a big idea. And I know that I'm not ready to work on it just yet, so I'm kind of like compiling all my notes and putting them in a little, you know, bowl and waiting until I can get to a point where I can get to it. But it involves the goddess traveling through the seven gates and just taking a different approach with it, telling it from a different angle that I haven't found anywhere else, and doing a visual representation of it. I was thinking that I would like to use, for visual, I'd like to use a woman dressed and clad as the different embodiments of the goddess. Mm-hmm. But I thought a good way to do it would be to use seven different women of different ages and different shapes and sizes, and you know, because we're the goddess is forever, you know, but we're not. So I think the idea that we represent, you know, gods and goddesses through different times of creation, I wanted to kind of like own that. And there's quite a few people like on the board. I kind of have my eye on a few of the people on the board and that work in the ministries, mm-hmm. as being the women that I would like to see embody the goddess during the different parts of the gate. Hmm. And then, kind of go from there. I'm not sure exactly to what extent it'll develop into. You know, my grand idea is the thought of like, oh, it'd be great to make a movie, but I've never made a movie. So it's like, yeah, that's a great idea. Why don't you start with a picture book? Mm-hmm. Like, so it might be basic, it might be straightforward at first, but somewhere down the line, I would definitely like to be able to take the opportunity to create like a grander piece of art using as many people from the different ministries that can lend a hand and, you know, make a real kind of strong creative community project with all of us and put that out there and express it. So.
Yeah. And having that sort of community piece brings in a lot of people and gives them time to bond with themselves, with each other and with the temple and the Egregore.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. So that's been something on the back burner for me, but I'm still compiling as I go.
Yeah. So, you've done a lot of drumming for the temple events. How do you form the music for the rituals? And do you plan it out, or do you adapt it for the ritual?
Sometimes it depends on the celebrant, I guess. I've been working. A lot of my work was done with Christopher in the beginning, and then mm-hmm. from there I worked with Alex and her circles that she was doing. So I go with what their thoughts are. So if they ask me that they would like me to come in and play drums, mm-hmm. then if they have a set idea, I take what they want me to do, and I incorporate that and always try to bring that out as much as I can, but a lot of it is depending on the situation. A lot of it is improv'd.
Yeah.
It's an interesting place to be when where I am in the circles. I actually have a great partner in regards to music working.
Mm-hmm.
He's a very talented musician, can play a bit of everything. And him and I will sit and either work out things ahead of time and bounce ideas off of each other for different instruments, depending on, mainly with the Sabbaths, we'll focus on... We'll focus on what the message is of the Sabbath and then think about what the best way to express that would be musically, mm-hmm. keeping in tune with the message.
Yeah.
So we'll improv, but for the most part,
we'll have a vague idea of what you want. And...
Yeah, we'll have a general idea, but we'll feed off of the energy of what's going on. A lot of times I've scrapped the entire thing I had planned, mm-hmm. and just fed off of the energy. When you're on the outskirts of it, everybody's involved in the circle, and then... You know, we kind of end up getting hit. I guess the same happens with the person that's hosting it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not as directly involved in the energy, so you get to observe it, you know. Or guiding a meditation, now you're seeing everybody else go through the meditation, and you pick up on these other influences that you might not have picked up on. So mm-hmm. mostly it's mostly done that way, and it's worked out really well. Like with Christopher and Alex, at least, like they both have their own style.
Mm-hmm.
And Christopher is very rock and roll with his, but I know that influence from him, from knowing him for so many years.
Yeah.
So I always try to incorporate, because I know his comfortability lies with rock, a more rock aspect. So I'll probably throw in an R&B or rock kind of drop beat with stuff, especially if he's reciting incantations and,
mm-hmm.
and guiding meditations. I'll give him like a rhythm that will kind of help a little bit, you know, like maybe add a little texture to it underneath. And with Alex, because her influences are totally different, those are like kind of more like world music drum beats.
Mm-hmm.
a lot of Celtic influence, and I've even brought in, which has cracked her up, because she's actually from South Africa, and I've brought in African rhythms, and that's become a little running joke with her and I. But I it's always different, and actually even now, which I don't know when this will be broadcast, but the Hecate ritual is interesting because it's both, which is kind of cool. And we just had our rehearsal and everything, and being able to know like where I need to jump in and stuff, like that stuff helps a lot, you know. And it's all depending on the structure, on who's designing the circle. You know, some people would like to have a lot of music, and other people, they really don't. That doesn't work for them, and it can get confusing. And I totally understand that. So I let them guide me, and then I add to it what I can, and take whatever inputs they have. If they're like, oh no, I don't want that, that's really busy, or this is that and this is that. But I've actually, even with working in the rehearsal back last week, I had some ideas, and I'd like to actually maybe take the meditation from that and do a recording with the music, and have that be something that maybe, you know, you could put out there and people could pick up a copy of. Because I like the idea when you and Christopher were discussing how the meditation works, and that it's not something that necessarily people that are not supposed to go through the entire experience will have. If they get lost, not lost, that's a bad word for it, but if they get drawn towards a certain part, you know, whether it be the river or the bridge, and they get stuck there, and they just kind of focus on that, and then the meditation ends, then that's where they were supposed to be, you know. And I thought that that was really interesting, and I thought that that might make an interesting thing to have as a piece of music for people. With that, we always experiment. We actually record a lot of our performances for the rituals, and then we go back and we listen to it. And we've started taking those pieces of music and reimagining them, and we're actually recording a box set of CDs of all the different rituals, and it's going to end up just being ritual music. And so as of now, we have one that's finished. We're working on another one right now for one of the upcoming rituals that we hope to have finished for. But we did Litha last year, and we recorded three pieces of music just in our studio, and it went really well, and we used the influence from the recording of the Litha circle, and just took the bits that worked. And, you know, being in a live setting, you know, some things work and some things don't work, you know. And it's always a mixed bag, so take the pieces that work and stuff that almost work that you don't want to let go of, and try to see if you can make something with it. So we've been doing that, and we thought that it would be an interesting thing to put out there for people, because we've been asked a lot if we have any music for people to purchase and stuff. And you know, we're hoping that by doing this, it kind of gives into maybe somebody else's magical practice too. I mean, I love music, but you know, to be able to pick up something that's so like specific like that would be great. And I can't think of anything off the top of my head that does that, so I think it would be kind of neat. So.
So going into the future, what would you like to what would you like to see out of pagan artists, musicians, and poets in the future?
Oh. I'd like them to be serious about what they express, but at the same time not take themselves too seriously.
It's a definite balance.
I think there's definitely a way to do it, you know, but I think sometimes we get drawn into, as creative people, you start thinking about like, well, how can I make money?
Yeah.
You know, because it's tough, because we need to have a job and we have to have a way to make income. So you think about your talents and you think about the things that you're capable of doing, and you're like, yeah, but, you know, I just went to the store and I saw this thing, and my God, I can make one of those, you know, with no problem. It's always harder than you think. And the idea that you don't want to take your creative output and you don't want to tailor it for anybody. Yeah. It obviously just my opinion. That 25 cents will get you a quarter. But, you know, I think if you're expressing yourself and you're being true to yourself, and that's where you're coming from in your process, just like in magic, if you're not looking to go out there and take advantage of anybody, or you're not looking to go out there and manipulate somebody or manipulate situations, you know, you'll get a better payoff, I guess, from it, you know, and not just in a monetary sense, but just in a sustenance sense.
Yeah.
'Cause art is so subjective, and, you know, you can take five people and look at a piece of art, and you get five totally different responses, and yeah. that's the point. Mm-hmm. So to sit and say, you know, well, that person's point of view is the one I want to gravitate towards, you know, like, well, why? You know, what was your point of view? Didn't you do that because that was something that you wanted to create, and didn't that help you or heal you in some way? Because I think that that's really a big piece of it. It's an expressing of yourself that you can't put into words in whatever way you're doing it.
So it's more like an approach such as like art therapy.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's like the primitive level of it, you know, with mm-hmm. art. It's that frustration of not being able to tell somebody an idea or, you know, expressing yourself, getting it out of yourself, and then, you know, maybe you could with a piece of music, some type of emotion that you couldn't tap, that, mm-hmm. you know, you can't verbalize, or a painting, or a story, write a book, you know, and even short stories, you know. I think we get locked into this idea of like, well, I'm no Picasso. Like, well, good. There already was a Picasso.
Yeah.
So that's great. And I think it freezes people up, you know, they get all self-conscious and they're just like, well, I don't want to show you that. Like, well, what do you like? I can't show you what I do. Like,
yeah.
That's silly. You're doing it for you.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
whoever gets into it from there is a bonus. But, you know, you don't want to tailor it for any specific thing, thinking that you're going to get a particular outcome. It's too chaotic,
yeah.
I think.
I also think some people are afraid to, you know, show artwork because it makes them vulnerable.
Yeah, definitely.
And also, I don't think that they realize that, you know, the deepest part of them is actually the deepest part of everyone else as
exactly.
well.
Exactly.
So, you know, when they finally do show it, they see how much it resonates with mm-hmm. other people.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of really great pieces of art that we have. My brain goes back to like music because I'm always kind of surprised by songs that are popular.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at some of like the older songs, like I think, which was maybe not a huge hit, but a pretty big hit, like say from a band Queen and mm-hmm. David Bowie, they did Under Pressure.
Yeah.
And when you sit and you listen to it and you're like, wow, what a great song. But when you really listen to it and you listen to the lyrics and what it's saying and the message that it has, it's speaking to an undercurrent. It's speaking to a level of us that doesn't happen very often. Like that song shouldn't have been a hit when you listen to the lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way. People should have went, oh, I don't want to hear that. But it's true, you know, if you can get to that kind of like core truth of the matter and
mm-hmm.
and that's what people connect to, you know. If it's a flash in the pan, it's just going to be in the moment, and then when that moment's gone, then no one really cares.
Yeah.
You know, the stuff gets kind of tossed off, and some really good qualities of something that shouldn't be tossed off gets lost.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
And so are you working on any t-shirts that are going to come out soon, or?
Right now I'm finishing the design on the Hecate t-shirt. That one I'm not 100% sure if for the ritual we'll have like set for people to like buy to walk away with.
Mm-hmm.
My thought now, because of I have a silk screener.
Yeah.
And what I thought about doing was to take the idea, if it's not going to be able to be manufactured at that date, let's say,
yeah,
is to maybe like make a mock-up and then have it there for people to look at.
Mm-hmm.
And then
maybe take an order.
Do like a pre-order,
mm-hmm.
and then have it like sent to people, you know, because it's pretty cheap to throw in the mail.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a t-shirt. So maybe doing something like that. But I realized with doing the self-print thing is that the quality is not there in regards to, and I wouldn't feel right about somebody, you know, buying a t-shirt that I made that say on the 20th watch, the washing, it's like, oh, now the image is almost gone.
Yeah.
Well, that would really suck. And I wouldn't buy a t-shirt for me again if that happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I keep that in mind and go, yeah, your shirts suck. I'm not buying that. So that particular design is one that I'm doing. I got recently set up for a contact for an embroidery place that I hope to find a good deal on, because I've got some ideas that I'd like to see for, I guess, more in the direction of like ritual dress, you know, like if you're going to go someplace or you're going to go to a ritual, you
mm-hmm.
know, and you want to put on a black shirt, maybe have something with some magical imagery on it, but doesn't look like, you know, doesn't look like you're wearing a t-shirt from Old Navy.
Yeah.
So, some of that is some of my focus is anyways towards that, like more in a more like adult based product. But I think the first thing you'll end up seeing, I'm almost positive, the first thing you'll end up seeing is the Hikate t-shirt. And then from there is going to end up being like a general temple of mm-hmm. witchcraft t-shirt with the temple logo and a setup on that. So
cool.
Those are the two that are definitely like, they're pretty much ready to go to come out. So
sweet. Let's see. Oh, I have gotten to my final question. Leo is associated with the sun, which symbolizes our inner star and our core being. What advice do you have to people who are trying to get to their inner star and let it shine out their true will?
That's a very simple question.
You say that sarcastically, I'm sure.
A little. I think, you know, not to cop out and go back to what we talked about before, but mm-hmm. I think that idea of expressing yourself from a as grounded of a place that you can get.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody's going to be super grounded all the time. It's not possible.
Yeah.
But I think as long as you're finding a way that you can express yourself in a positive way, you know, there's only a couple things that you can do. You know, you can influence people positively or negatively or not at all. And
mm-hmm.
I think as long as you're putting stuff out there that you're not looking to, like, you know, be nasty. You know, you want to come from a place of unconditional love, essentially.
Yeah.
And I think anything that's being expressed, no matter how dark it is, I think if it's coming from a place of unconditional love, I think you're doing all right. And bringing the darkness to light, you know, I kind of feel as though it's kind of like my personal, I guess, motto. Like, that's, for me, the idea of pulling the things from the darkness into the light in that way. Give them room to breathe and move around, and they're not so scary anymore when you do that.
Yeah.
So I think that that's probably the advice that I would give for that.
Okay. So. Cool. Well, this has been fun. We will say goodbye to our listeners and hope they enjoyed.
I hope so.
Bye, listeners.
Goodbye, listeners. The stuff I was thinking about, of course, when you're here in the moment, you're doing it.
I hope you enjoyed our interview together with Derek O'Sullivan, and once again, his partner in crime is Ed Newton at our Wheel of the Year celebrations. They've done a great job for us playing music and doing amazing job of really putting our rituals to music, and I think everyone who's been there has really enjoyed their additions to it. To close out this podcast, before I do my de-invocation of this space and this time with you, I'd like to say a little prayer of thanks to those who have helped the temple. So if you'd like to join me in that, please take a deep breath. Focus your intentions. Great God and Goddess, we call upon you to bless and keep the people of the temple. We call upon you to bless those who participate in our circles, in our magic, and in our work. Without them, we would not be. We thank the priests and those who are moderating our rituals, aiding us all to reach forth into spirit and to get that connection to bring in an Aquarian age. We thank the spirits of the temple who watch over us and guide us. And we thank the ancestors and the mighty dead who aid us from beyond the veil, guiding our tradition, helping it to grow from the past and into the future. We thank you, Lord and Lady, for all blessings that you have given us, and ask that these blessings be for the highest good, harming none. So mote it be. Take a deep breath, and as you breathe out, send that blessing out into the universe. All right, let's de-invoke our space. We thank the Great Spirit and the two who move as one. We thank the three rays of love, will, and wisdom. We thank the God and the Goddess who move through us and work with us. May we recognize your presence in our lives. Blessed be. Merry meet, merry part, and merry meet again. Blessed be, everyone. You've been listening to Voices of the Temple. The contents of this podcast are copyright 2010 of the Temple of Witchcraft. For more information, please visit templeofwitchcraft.org.